Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. A little John Mellencamp to start your morning off. A Fight Authority. A pretty good song, I think, for the week.
Yes,
leading
sir.
Up to No Kings Week over here, Mr. Matt Neely. I'm sorry I didn't get you a card, but quite the week here in Tucson, Arizona. This is correct. As I woke up this morning, we are still lacking monarchy. So I'm going to say this is a big win for Southern Arizona. As we talked about at the end of our show last week, there was a protest lined up for Wednesday afternoon, right, at Valencia and Country Club. And sure enough, that manifestation happened. We knew it was coming. We talked about it this morning. And so if I know about it, right, like, you know, this is not some big secret in any capacity out there. And there was quite a bit of violence over here. If this was mostly peaceful, I'd really like to know, like, what those definitions of mostly peaceful are. For those of us in the restaurant business, we actually have to file a report with both the police department, right, the municipal authorities, and the state department of liquor every time there's something called an act of violence.
Yeah.
And so we've got an AOV report, like a physical piece of paper I need to turn in every time there is an incident involving a fight, altercation.
Not an AOC report, but an AOV report.
Yes, okay. AOV. It's fight, altercation, or tumultuous conduct. Bodily injuries are sustained that would be obvious to a reasonable person. Sufficient intensity to require police intervention to restore order if a weapon is brandished or used, or if in any way, shape, or form we fail to follow a lawful order from law enforcement or our patrons do. Now, I would say that every single bit of both Wednesday and Saturday's protest had some of these elements in some capacity, right? The same kind of elements that those of us in the business world as reasonable operators would have to not only qualify as an act of violence, but to send something to the State Department of Liquor to annotate that we are, in fact, a bad player. As you've heard talks about liquor licenses being potentially revoked, the hi-fis of the world in some capacity, having fights or too many acts of violence, this happened quite regularly. At what point, if my customers were to show up with sawzalled hot water heaters as shields and spraying pepper spray on the police, like, this would have been like top news stories, right? Like, this would have been more than an act of violence. Like, this would have been really something huge. And so to pretend that in some way, shape, or form that these were peaceful manifestations, I think, is entirely wrong. Now, I feel bad for the Tucson Police Department. I think they were put in an incredibly difficult position on this case. But the real MVP in this one, Mr. Neely, is actually the weather. Quite frankly, had we had cooler weather on Saturday afternoon, there would have been substantially more problems.
You're probably right.
One only need to look back in history and think of the Rodney King riots. That particular trial date ended on April 29th, 1992. I remember I was 15 years old, so you can backdate how old I am from that information if you'd like. But ultimately, I was 15 years old, and this was near summertime in L.A., and there was absolutely massive riots, right? On a national level, we all remember the Rodney King riots. But what you don't recall was 5 months after that, there was another case in Detroit, Michigan, where I was from, where there was a killing of an African-American individual. His name was Malice Green. And this happened on November 5th, 1992, only months after the Rodney King riots. And everybody in Detroit was horrified by both the violence, the death of this particular man, potentially at the hands of police. And there was a lot of trials over this one. But we were expecting riots. Like, here it comes. Like, this is going to be just like LA. But if anybody knows what the weather's like in November in Michigan, it can be quite cold and windy and blustery. And quite frankly, that weather prevented social unrest that particular week. I recall thinking, thank goodness it is 32 degrees and windy and sleety and raining out there.
Sure.
And most people that are offended by any of these sort of things, particularly in, say, the No Kings, you know, type of manifestation, I'm offended, but I'm not 112 degree offended. You know, I'm like 97 like degrees.
For imprint, sure, yeah. I'm not 112 degree,
right?
Degrees offended.
And so we had bigger and more problematic manifestations in the late afternoon on the ICE, you know, campaign that went on in that building at Country Club in Valencia.
Yes.
Because you were in the
shade.
Vandalism.
The criminal vandalism.
You had
that.
The setting western yeah. sun. But when you start to think about what that weather looks like at Reed Park at 10:30 a.m., 11 a.m., even by the time you get to noon, it's over. It's hot as Hades. Mm-hmm. Everybody's out of there. As somebody that runs an outdoor farmer's market, right, every single Saturday and Sunday, yeah. in these summer months, we are out of there by 11:30 in the morning. Like right. there is zero commerce. Everybody is melting. The organic produce is literally liquefying into the pavement That's at that right. point. And so quite frankly, I think it's safe to say, Matt, yeah. that the weather saved us even more than Police Chief Kazmar, who was really stuck in a terrible position in between the rock and a hard place. But you had officers being sprayed by pepper spray in both occasions yeah. here.
What is the protest? You're going to say, well, I thought it was a water bottle. I thought it was cooling them off with some with a little spritz of water.
Yes, yeah, right. right? Sure. If you're showing up and you're actively blasting police officers with pepper spray, like you are asking for problems. Like this is far more than a peaceful protest at that point. And certainly the standards that are put upon the private sector, such as myself, are a far, far higher standard than I think the media is putting sure. on our citizens when they're allowing these sort of things.
Well, it's a
to
good
happen.
Point. And if you're going to have like an assembly of 1,000 people, if I had a group and I wanted to do something at the park, I believe I would have to file a permit, which would have plans for ingress and egress and emergency preparedness. And, oh, you're going to have police for crowd control. It's kind of funny that there's two sets of rules, you know, for people that want to have large assemblies, say.
Right. And I don't buy necessarily our right of center statement saying everybody was paid to be there, that this was a plant for just paid protesters. We indirectly pay people to be there. We pay them because they're on the dole in some capacity and they don't have to work. And so quite frankly, you know, like so many of us that you don't have to be in the office at some way, shape, or form aren't going to be out there protesting in the same way that non-working individuals might be. And while I certainly respect and appreciate everybody's right to have a peaceful First Amendment level free speech protest, this one went a little too far. And I think our media has been a little soft in sugarcoating these things. But on the four things you need to know today, as you said at the top of the hour, the Pima County Board of Supervisors had voted 3-2 to approve the sale of 290 acres for a cool total of $21 million to a data center. And that data center, of course, uses an awful lot of power and water. And only moments later, TEP announces, you know what, thanks for that hookup over here, but we're going to bring you a 14% increase on our rates starting as soon as September of 2026. And to make it more interesting, they added in a bit of their own social justice on here as well, too. There happens to be some rate discounts for folks who earn less than a certain percentage compared to the federal poverty level. And there's a couple breakdowns on that one. And I find that one interesting as well, too. Like that sort of wealth redistribution in some capacity. Like the idea that there wouldn't just be the same power rate for everybody kind of doesn't make sense. Imagine if I had a different rate for hamburgers for client X who came, you know, with this W-2, but client Y earned three times as much and I was able to charge them more money. I could only imagine both the blowback on that.
Sure.
And how do you prove that? How do you go out there? Is TEP going to check your tax returns? Are they going to see your write-offs? Are they going to look at somebody who had some sort of Section 179 right. bonus depreciation and then drove their income down to zero uh-huh. and then gets discounted power because of it? The whole thing smacks to me yeah, of
since,
some
since
impropriety.
When does a public utility have the, I think is what you're getting at, do they have the power to do the income redistribution that the government does?
Correct.
It's really weird. It's the same thing with the differential water rates. They already tipped their hand 4 years ago where they said, well, we're going to get this $9 million windfall from these rates, but we're going to also use a chunk of it to pay for people's water bills who can't afford it. Well, that's called income redistribution. That's not called it costs more to deliver water to these people, and it's just an offset. Absolutely. So they already tipped their hand.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And if you recall, TEP took a 10% rate increase in September sure. of 2023.
Sure, yeah, back to electricity. Yeah.
So we've got 10% over there plus another 14% coming up. Yeah. So in a three-year period, you're getting 24% over there. That's a pretty big whammy no matter how and where you feel about inflation in some capacity. And I think this one stuck in the craw a little bit of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. And Matt Hines announced that there should be a revote as soon as possible. trouble on this one, that they might actually want to rethink the agreement with this big, you know, power data center in some capacity, given the, I don't want to say underhandedness, but sort of late release of this 14% rate increase only moments after the board of supervisors made that decision.
Grant.
Now, all of it may be for naught, however, because the property would still need to be annexed by the city of Tucson,
right.
And they
right.
don't have another city of Tucson council meeting scheduled until August. And so we might be waiting at least 6 more weeks before this thing pops up in some capacity. And a number of supervisors said yesterday that, quite frankly, if the city doesn't annex it, the deal is dead either way. So stay tuned. Lots coming up on that one over there.
Yeah, just I'm going to go Columbo here on you. We just, the city council just got a huge raise and they're taking 1 month off.
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I was seeing things.
It's actually 6 weeks over there. A minor summer break over here.
Seems a little odd.
No big deal, right? I wonder if the city council will be like Maynard's. It might be a little more than a summertime closure over here for those guys. But in all seriousness, there's a lot to unpack over here in both Pima County and the city of Tucson for this data center. I love the idea of jobs. I love the idea of economic development. I don't love the idea of TEP doing wealth redistribution. Differential rates for both power. We've got differential rates for water. Like, we're going to see a 14% power increase, a 6% water increase. The world is just getting more expensive out there, guys. But we're going to have a little talk about that when we come back after the break. We're going to have one of my favorite folks out there, the kind of people that are in the private sector that are brave enough to come out there and run for politics. We've got the owner of Sammy's Mexican Grill, restaurateur Jorge Rivas. He's a candidate for CD7 congressional seat. Coming up, those ballots drop today. Don't go anywhere. Jorge Rivas coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Always excited to be here with you on Wednesday mornings. You know, the show, my little portion of Wednesday on The Morning Voice happens to be the intersection of business and politics. And I probably couldn't have a guest that represents that better than the one standing, or sitting, I should say, across from me right now in our studio. That's Mr. Jorge Rivas, is the owner of Sammy's Mexican Grill on Oracle Road and candidate, Republican candidate for Congressional District 7. Good morning, Jorge.
Good morning. It is an honor, a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to bringing some news, information, and anything that you want to talk about. I'm ready to go.
Love it. Well, why don't you break down your background just a little bit for some of our listeners over here so that they can learn a little bit more about you, for those that don't know who Jorge Rivas is.
I've been in Tucson for over 30 years. I'm originally from El Salvador. For those that are old enough, like myself, probably remember that back in 1980s, we had a civil war where people from Cuba and some from Soviet Union were trying to make the Central American region of the continent into a communist bloc. So there was a war being fought between the good people and bad people. It seems like that hasn't changed in about 50 years. You know, we're still fighting the bad people. But anyways, as in any other war, a civil war is very similar to a real war, because there is a lot of fighting, destruction. And when you are a teenager, there's not that many opportunities, because businesses, buildings, bridges, power plants, everything is blown apart to bring the system down, you know, the government. So I was lucky to migrate to the United States, and I am very grateful that I've had the opportunity to live the American dream. And I met my wife about 30 years ago. We've been married for 29, and I have 3 sons, my oldest one being 27 and my youngest one 24, and there's one in between. And like you said, I own Sammy's Mexican Grill. We started in a food wagon, in a lunch wagon. We did that for 9 years, and then we opened our own little place.
I love when people get the opportunity to sort of use a food truck as an incubator, mm-hmm. and then work their mm-hmm. way into a mm-hmm. brick-and-mortar location. We talk about that story a lot, and we've had a lot of restaurateurs that have done that, and you mm-hmm. are an example of someone that was successful in those sort of steps.
Yeah. I tell people, you know, now that I'm running, that my wife, my family and I, we are the example of a living American dream. where you come, no matter where you come from, you work hard, you're honest, you provide good service, in this case, you know, decent food. And if you don't spend what you make, your earnings, if you don't waste it on drugs, alcohol, or anything else, you have a shot, you know, to be successful. In our case, you know, to move up, you know, a little bit, you know, a step at a time, where you don't need to do anything illegal to sell drugs or anything like that, to have the things that make a comfortable life, you know, to where you own your own house and et cetera. You know, et cetera. So
Sammy's made national news a number of years ago, mm-hmm. in a previous presidential election where this was tweeted about by Donald Trump, and that mm-hmm. drew you guys an awful lot of attention, both positive and negative. Can you talk about that and how even your minor involvement in politics mm-hmm. at that point mm-hmm. affected your family's restaurant?
Yeah, by 2016, when Trump, you know, came to Tucson for the first time. He came to the Tucson Convention Center. We knew that, you probably remember that he was already labeled as a person who, as a racist, as an evil person, you know, and the social, especially on those days, the Spanish-speaking media was saying, all Latinos hate Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not going to receive any support from the Latino because we all hate him. Everybody, you know. And I said to myself, speaking to many other Latino customers, I came to the conclusion, I said, that's not correct. You know, a lot of Latinos like Donald Trump. Because one of the things that I like about him was that he was a straightforward talking kind of person. You know, he didn't go around sounding like a politician. He wasn't like, you know, like Hillary Clinton, you know, just making it sound so pretty. He was like straightforward. And that's the kind of person that I am. That's the kind of people that I like to hang out with. You know, if you tell me, you know, that I'm doing something wrong, I will appreciate if you tell me right, you know, right the way it is. You know, don't put any sugar coating on top. So on the day that he came to Tucson, was a Saturday, I wrote a sign, you know, like a 1x2 roughly, feet, that says Latinos support Donald Trump. And my wife happened to go to the meeting with my kids, and she was sitting in front, you know, right in front of the stage, and President Trump started talking about her sign. And then she goes, bring this sign up. And then a couple seconds later, she goes, oh, come on, bring her up here, asking for my wife to come up. But my wife was extremely happy that all that happened. She was very happy to have met Trump. But later, the following week, we started getting negative backlash from people, not only on social media, but hundreds and thousands of calls calling us every single name, every single word that you can think of. You know, people were really mean and aggressive.
I can imagine. I mean, anytime mm-hmm. you stick your neck out there in politics as mm-hmm. a business owner, mm-hmm. you're putting yourself in risk in right. some capacity, right. which is why I think you see so many of us not make those choices, mm-hmm. right? And we mm-hmm. tend to be mm-hmm. wishy-washy about it, or a cult where mm-hmm. you might stand politically. And I mm-hmm. think that hurts all of us. Mm-hmm. Like, more people need to be brave, mm-hmm. like you and your wife, for mm-hmm. sticking up for what you believe in, mm-hmm. you know, in spite of also being in the business community. Mm-hmm. Those two things shouldn't be as separate as they are.
Yeah, I mean, if we take the word that President Kennedy said, you know, almost 180 years ago or so, where he says, is not what the country can do for you, is what you can do for your country. You know, if a person has the capacity or the ability or the time, you know, to get involved in politics and use their knowledge, their skills, their moral values to make a positive change, I think that's very important. I mean, because I know there is a lot of people out there who are very smart, who are great moral values, but I think, I you know, like you said, you know, you come to the conclusion that if I'm a small business owner, if I get involved, and if you've never been involved in politics, most likely you're going to get canceled, or the people are going to try to shut you down, which is very sad, because we've seen that happen before. But in our case, I think we're we have been, like what they say, bulletproof, to where the attacks from the cancel culture, it doesn't affect us anymore as much as will affect some other business that has never been attacked by their left-leaning media or left-leaning people that think that it has to be their way and no other way, which is very sad.
Well, and certainly I think your location on North Oracle Road in mm-hmm. Oracle helps you out as well, too. If this, mm-hmm. if your mm-hmm. restaurant was located in Midtown, you might be a bit more of a subject of the cancel culture,
right,
where
right.
just the constituency mm-hmm. on North Oracle, mm-hmm. when you're talking about the mm-hmm. Saddlebrook community,
mm-hmm. oh, yeah.
might lean a little more right of center
of course,
than
yeah.
Midtown Tucson, yeah. which I think yeah. also makes a big, big difference.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break over here for just a minute, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Jorge's congressional race. He's the Republican candidate in the primary for mm-hmm. CD7. Those
right.
ballots actually get mailed out today, the mm-hmm. 18th of June. So those of you who live in CD7, and we're going to talk about the border of what CD7 is after the break, you live over there, in the next couple of days, you're going to have those ballots hitting your mailbox. Gabriela Cazares-Kelly, our recorders, announced a couple of new ballot drop boxes that she's created out there that'll be open 24 hours a day. Can't see anything going wrong with those ones in any capacity. Jorge Rivas and I, owner of Sammy's Mexican Grill and candidate for CD7, coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice.
You've always heard The Voice. Now you can see The Voice. Join us, 10:30 The Voice on Facebook, and watch along with the show.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. You are live with Grant Kruger and restaurateur extraordinaire Jorge Rivas, owner of Sammy's Mexican Grill. Sammy's running for Congress. He's the Republican candidate in a primary that starts today. Those ballots are hitting your mailboxes literally today. Sammy, how are you feeling about this race?
I'm feeling very good. I think we do have a great opportunity, a chance to flip the seat. It's not going to be easy, but they said when things are easy, anybody can do them. So I'm here because it's tough, and we can do this.
Big money is being spent right now in the Democrat primary, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a consensus out there that says, hey, the Democrat voter advantage is so strong in CD7
mm-hmm.
that whoever wins that one, you know, is going to be the clear-cut favorite
mm-hmm.
in the general.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an idea of who your opponent might be in the general on the Democrat side? Who do you think is leading that race?
Obviously, there's a couple of them. They have name recognition for so many years, but I think people are tired of the same old thing. I mean, if you see the number of homeless out on the street, it appears to be increasing every single year. And also people are talking about, you know, the amount of drugs out on the street. And obviously many people that are homeless right now is because, I don't know the exact percentage, but I will consider 80 to 90% are people that are also hooked on drugs. So for me, I think it is important, if you want to lower the amount of people that you have out on the street as homeless, you need to drastically lower the amount of drugs that are available.
So what is your solution for that? If you win this seat, like, what's the Jorge Rivas plan to fix this?
Well, considering that's for me, that's the number one complaint that I've heard from voters. Is drugs and homeless. And also with homeless, there goes also break-ins, robberies, stealing, people going to businesses, grabbing whatever they can and just run away. So to work on those three issues, which is for me is only one, because you got to lower the amount of drugs on the street. And I think for that, we need to have much tougher sentences. Because the other day I was listening to the Pinal County Sheriff Ross Steeple. He said that he found bags and bags on fentanyl. And then at the end, the reporter said, oh, this person might face 10 years in jail. So if you're talking about a system that is very weak, he might get 5 years. But if he has a good behavior, he might be out in 2.5 years. So I think we need to have a system, a legal system that really gives a punishment to a person that is bringing so much drugs into the country that is much tougher, so people will think twice about not selling drugs.
I saw a report from Sheriff Steeple that was talking about how one of their drug enforcement raids was actually broken up by protesters who showed up last week fighting that, thinking it was some sort of ICE raid and that they were actually involved in almost wrecking like a tremendous drug bust that took 35 pounds of cocaine and 100 some odd pounds of fentanyl off the streets of Southern Arizona.
Yeah. So it is sad that our culture has become so crazy. I mean, we need to have respect for authorities, you know. But I think, sadly, we also see the breakdown of family values. You know, I think as parents, we're doing a very poor job in taking our kids to Bible school, Bible lessons, etc. Where our kids have good moral values, you know, respect for police officers, respect for the teachers. And I think, you know, it's something that I have seen in my own, in our own house, in our own lives. Where we were able to raise our kids with good moral values, and also many of our friends that also took their kids to church since very little, they have grown up to be real responsible young men and women, and I think that's part of the problem that we're having as well. Because I saw the other day, a couple of years maybe, when Tucker Carlson was still on Fox, where he showed a chart where he says the number of people going to church has dropped like 50%. And the number of people going to jail has increased, you know, almost the same rate, which shows that that we need to do a better job.
Without a doubt. And it sounds like you've done a great job with your kids over here. As a naturalized citizen, you know, you would become potentially the second individual, Juan Ciscomani being the first, right, to become a citizen and then a Latino citizen and then elected to Congress. Tell me about that process a little bit. How does that affect your admiration or respect for the United States, having come from another country, a war-torn civil war, and setting up your businesses and living out the American dream here?
I feel a responsibility as someone who has received so much. Not that I am a millionaire or any. I'm not talking about, you know, wealth in terms of millions. I'm just talking
about your restaurateur. We're thousandaires, sir.
Yeah, I'm just talking about, you know, having your own small house where you're very comfortable, having a family where you have to worry about your safety so much as you would in the country that I come from. So to me, it's a responsibility to give a little bit of what I have on my time to give back to the community and say, you know, the person that makes me who I am, you know, my values, my work ethics, my belief in God, I think I can bring a whole lot, you know, to make the right decision for the community. And I feel that just like Juan Ciscomani, I can be the one that makes the right decision, not compared to, you know, the left crazy people like AOC and her gang that are just, I question myself, and I know a lot of people question themselves and say, how did these people get to be, you know, Congress of the United States of America, you know? So that's one of the reasons that I'm running, that I know that I can bring a positive change, a positive attitude. And my values will make a big difference, you know, working for the community, because people are tired, you know, people that are young children, they want to have a regular, normal life.
Well, business owner values are something that I think is lacking so often in politics. Even on a local level, when we talk about the $2.4 billion budget that is Pima County, the city of Tucson, and the $1.9 billion budget that is unincorporated Pima County. When you're talking about people running essentially companies, right, corporations that are worth billions of dollars, shouldn't somebody have some degree of business experience to know what it's like to pay rent, to know what it's like to move heaven and earth, to just barely make payroll that week in some capacity, to feel the highs and the lows? I feel like these are skill sets, right? This is a training in life to move to these higher levels. And we intend, so often here in the city of Tucson or in Pima County, are electing social activists, people that have worked for nonprofits, people that certainly care about their community, but don't necessarily have that same skill set that business owners like yourself do.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot we can do. Like I said, I have a lot of respect for Raul Grijalva. I know that a lot of people say that he did a lot of good. But at the same time, I think there is a lot that needs to be done. And it's sad that if people were to vote for a Democrat to continue to be in the next congressman, I think they will be voting for what the Democratic Party is representing at this moment. I mean, their woke culture, their defund the police. I mean, I've gone to a meetings, you know, neighborhood meetings with people say, I called the police because I had an emergency. I waited 15 minutes. I waited 30 minutes. I waited an hour, 2 hours. The police never showed up. And we know that there is a sense that young people do not want to become police officers because it's not seen as a profession where they're going to be respected. So we need to change the culture, and we need to start by electing the right people to public office. I mean, like I said, if you vote for a Democrat candidate, they're going to be implementing the same craziness that the Democratic Party has become. You know, where they support indoctrinating children about sexual activities when they are, you know, in first, second grade. You know, if they say, oh, you know, I feel like a girl today, they say, okay, yeah, let's cut off your private parts. You know, they give you, you know, pump you with hormones. I mean, how insane is that?
No, it's been a continuous problem in our society that mm-hmm. kids that are 6, 7, 8 years old, like, don't exactly know what they want to be, right? I wanted to be a pirate at 7 years old. Yeah. I'm glad that my dad didn't chop off my leg and give me a hook for a hand in some capacity, because that would have been a tremendous mistake, right?
Yeah. So we need common sense. We need the common sense leadership. And people that appreciate this country, you know, that know what it is to work hard and appreciate what they have. And I have that because that's the way that my life has been for, you know, the last 40 years. So
without a doubt. Well, why don't we take one more quick break over here? We've got one more segment with restaurateur extraordinaire Jorge Rivas. He's owner of Sammy's Mexican Grill. Mm-hmm. He's running for Congress. And again, for those of you who don't know, that's a special election for Raul Grijalva's seat for CD7. Those ballots are hitting the mail today. That election is on the 15th of July, right, Jorge?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's coming up soon. And I wanted to remind people, if they have never visited my website, to go to Rivas, number 4, Congress. Rivas4Congress.com. That's my website. And if they have any questions, they can always, you know, get in touch with me. And if they want to talk to me, they can stop by the restaurant. You know, I'll give them a glass of water or soda, and we can sit down and, you know, and have a, you know, one-to-one conversation.
Love it. Well, we got one more segment with Jorge coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. We've got one more segment with Congressional District 7 candidate, Mr. Jorge Rivas. Welcome back, Jorge.
Thank you.
Hey, one of the hot topics this whole last week in politics on a nationwide level has been immigration, right? We've seen all these anti-immigration protests and manifestations that were, as they said, mostly peaceful and, mostly right. In parenthetical citations over there. As an immigrant, give me your rundown of where we're at right now, like in immigration in the United States on a federal level.
My personal belief that most of the Latinos are pro-legal immigration, because people like myself that come to from another country that was devastated by violence and insecurity, we're looking for a place, and we came to a country where we knew and we thought that it cares for the rule of law. And I think for me, that's very important. I think what the Biden administration created by letting so many people in illegally, basically, because they just gave him a piece of paper and said, here you go, come on in, without knowing who they were, without vetting them, without knowing their name, what was the purpose for them coming to the United States. And that created the chaos that we're seeing nowadays, where people are raping, shooting, killing, and then stealing. And I think that is so irresponsible, I mean, for lack of words, from coming from the especially Mallorca's, you know, the person being in charge. And I feel that we have a big problem that we need to fix, you know, starting what the president is doing, sending back all the people that have criminal record. And I think that it not only is important, but it's necessary, Because, you know, if you live in a safe community, quote unquote, and all of a sudden you have a group of guys that go around doing all those things that are creating chaos, is so irresponsible. So I think the people that are supporting that, the ones that are protesting, they are so naive and they are so irresponsible. And, you know, even if they were born in the United States, if they don't like the United States, they can go to any other country. They can move to any other country that they want. You know, but I think it's necessary that we enforce the laws that we have, the immigration laws, any other laws that we have in the United States, because if we don't, then we are creating a hole, you know, down that will come deeper and deeper, and that's not the way that we want to go down.
No, you're actually punishing the people who are doing it right.
Right.
That are showing up legally and going through the process and having to spend time in Ciudad Juarez, like waiting for interviews, you know, not exactly a tourist mecca down there, Juarez in some capacity. Mm-hmm. And of course, these countries all have their own immigration processes as well, too. As someone that moved to Mexico, immigrated down there and got work permits down there, I assure you, there was a vetting process that took many, many months and cost a lot of money and had a lot of time and a lot of interviews.
Oh, yeah.
It's the legal and correct way to do things.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to do in our society to move forward. There could and should be a legal immigration process, but we should be forced to follow those rules.
So, yeah, it is necessary that we follow the law because, like I said, if we don't follow the law, then we become a banana republic and we don't want that.
So let's circle back to your business over here for another minute or two. Win or lose in this election, you're running Sammy's over there. How's business going for you guys this last year?
Business was okay. As we know, the prices of everything went up, and that makes it a little harder to, you know, keep good prices for customers. But still, for me, I've been doing this for so long that I know how to move my pieces around and make sure that at the end of the day, at the end of the month, we're still good.
Sure, that's great. Hey, just surviving this many years in the restaurant business is, you know, quite a win. What year did Sammy's Brick and Mortar open up the store?
Back in 2005. In 2005, we were renting, and then from 2005 to 2011, we went through the process of submitting development plans to build our own place. And in 2011, we moved into our current building that I'm so blessed that God was able to bless us. And not that he was able to bless us, that we were able to receive the blessing because we own, 100% our own building. So
yeah, which is fantastic. Blessed. That's a great, great position to be in. Mm-hmm. And often a sign of longevity of restaurants as well, too. When you can get into that position to where you own your own building as opposed to leasing, you're just in a better position to survive
some of
the peaks and valleys that make up the restaurant business.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you've had a brick and mortar store for 20 years now, definitely qualifies your jersey to be hung up in the Restaurateur Hall of Fame here Southern Arizona, as I always say. Like, that's a great run, my friend.
So I tell people when I go to meetings that I'm not running for Congress because I want to become rich, I want to become famous, because I don't need any of that. That the blessing that I received so far is enough to have me to have a comfortable life. I'm doing it because I think it's necessary that we have people that are responsible. At this moment, there are two more Republicans running for the same district. But as many people already know, he says it all the time. He was in jail. Well, he was in prison for 10 years. He was also a drug addict for some years. And I think even though that he has overcome all those issues, I think from my perspective, you need to have someone who has, good moral values throughout their life to where they can preach by example.
Couple seconds left over here. Give me the rundown of where our listeners can find your campaign information.
They can find my campaign at Rivas4Congress, Rivas4Congress.com. And also they can find me, pretty much any day when I'm not out on the campaign. They can find me at the Sammy's Mexican Grill on Oracle Road.
Thank you. You've had a great hour over here. It's been fantastic to get to spend part of your Wednesday morning with us over here on The Morning Voice. And best of luck in this campaign. Those ballots get mailed out today, Jorge.
Yeah, thank you so much. And hopefully people will make the right choice, the right decision, and vote for me because I will take care of business.
Looking forward to the election over there. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with The Morning Voice. Don't go anywhere. Top of the hour, we're going to have Chef Logan Tessier from the Eddie, the new hotel over at River and Campbell. You're listening to The Morning Voice.
And you can see your voice by following at on Facebook at 1030 The Voice. That's the name of our page, 1030 The Voice on Facebook. We're streaming on video. Hit that like button and follow us to be notified of future streams.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you this Wednesday morning. It is certainly going to be a scorcher out there today. 108 is the high. 113 for the high tomorrow, Matt. That is going to keep a mostly peaceful protesting group off the streets of Tucson. Chuck George over here, but I'm calling that one right now. We are not going to see any protests tomorrow.
I think you're qualified enough to call that particular one.
Why, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I just to remind the folks real quick, if they'd like to see their voice as well as hear us, they can follow along on Facebook. We're broadcasting on Facebook in video and audio. And so if you'd like to join us, 1030 The Voice is the page. And while you're there, hit the like and follow button so you can be notified of all sorts of other good things coming out of our station.
Thanks for that update over there, Mr. Neely, sir. So as you said at the top of the hour, the city has banned camping in washes and watercourses in a 5-1 vote yesterday at their most recent meeting.
And the punishment is food and shelter. So
yes, absolutely.
A tad ironic.
Yes, it is ironic. And of course, this one smacks to me as really a CYA move from the city to protect themselves from the upcoming tidal wave of lawsuits that are likely to be filed because of the passing of last November of Proposition 312. For those keeping score at home, again, that's the enforcement of municipal nuisance laws bill that went through that essentially allows business owners and property owners to go out and to file a lawsuit against municipalities that aren't doing their basic services to protect society from these particular scourges. And so you saw it in the ban just recently on panhandling from the medians. And now you're seeing it on a ban on camping in washes and watercourses. They also changed the camping rules in parks and made that 24/7. It had been only from 10 p.m. on. And now they're basically saying that you can't camp in parks 24/7. Weren't these always the rules, Matt? Aren't we really just codifying
it
something
really,
to say we're doing something for this lawsuit?
It really does seem as though all of these things could have been enforced before.
And so this was a 5-1 vote. The Kevin Dahl voted against this particular one. Lane Santa Cruz was not present at yesterday's city council meeting. And in fairness to Mayor Romero, she took a lot of heat from this one. At the end of the meeting, like, she had to have a call to order with hecklers and yellers and have people actually removed from the room. Like, this, things got a little spicy in the city of Tucson on this one. And this one really, again, smacks me of advice from city attorney Mike Rankin to say, hey, you guys, we better do something on this one or we're going to be in a lot of trouble and have to write a lot of checks to businesses that make these particular filings. There's no real indication how many filings are out there yet for Proposition 312. It's only been a law for a number of months now. And certainly the city is going to deny every single one of these. So if you're going to start to build these particular cases against the city, my suggestion is to document. Sure. You got to take photos. I want you to call 911 or if it's non-emergency situations, call 311.
Sure.
Document those calls. Record your requests for the city to enforce these. If we do our part, we could all help make a difference, right? Like the Goldwater Institute and all the business people that came together to help get Proposition 312 passed did their part. And now it's on us to stand up and start to annotate these particular failures of our municipal government and hold them accountable for the very basic services that are the core of what they were elected to do. On other news in Tucson, the NHL season came to an end last night. Now, I know that's federal news, not Tucson news over here. The Florida Panthers won 5-1.
And you're from Detroit. NHL season is news.
Yes.
For Grant Kruger.
But this is tying into Tucson, though, as well, too.
Octopus is on the ice?
Well, no, it's not that. It's with local hockey over here as well, too. I was paying attention to the news, and just a few days ago, actually on the 22nd of May, a minor public sale of a piece of residential property happened. It was in Paradise Valley, and this piece traded for $30 million. And this happened to be the home of former Coyotes and current Roadrunners owner Alex Marullo. And so what that means is he's out on Arizona, guys. Like, he has sold his residential property on the 22nd of May, and he's gone. He's off to Reno, where they're building a 10,000-person stadium, right? And looking into this, one of the things that they've promised at that stadium is a minor league hockey team, mm-hmm. right? At the Grand Sierra Resort in Reno. Alex is a billionaire mm-hmm. and has the resources to do so. Current AHL, which is again the Tucson Roadrunners, you know, organization that they're under, is suggesting that we still have a lease for the city of Tucson for 2 years, and that they're saying right now we are good all the way through the conclusion of the 26-27 season. Mm-hmm. And so that's essentially two seasons of hockey left for the Roadrunners. This particular new stadium is supposed to break ground next month.
Okay.
And so it's coming. Like, whether it's 2 or 3 years, the Roadrunners, as we know it, are going to move to Reno. And I love Rio Nuevo, and I love Bob Hoffman from the Roadrunners, and they're not telling me that right now. This is Grant bringing you the gossip over here. Right. But looking at the property records, Alex Marullo has sold his house in Phoenix. He is building another stadium in Reno right now that is – announcing they're going to have a minor league hockey team. He owns a minor league hockey
as
team.
As it turns out.
I just have to say that our time with the Roadrunners is most likely extremely limited here in the old.
So we'll see how it all plays out. And, you know, I know Rio Nuevo did the deal to give them free rent for as long as they were here. But, and that is what it is. It's if they leave, it's just going to be water under the bridge. The tough part, now that we know that they could be going, that signs indicate that that's a possibility, is that not only did they give them the free rent, they also waived that ticket surcharge, which was the clawback for what the city did in terms of improvements for the stadium. So they've written that off. So again, they gave away the store, the rents, you know, whatever that, but they also gave away their recoupment, their ability to recoup the money that they put in for the Roadrunners, hockey, specifically for hockey. And that's the tough pill to swallow.
Without a doubt, that would leave us as the only professional team at the moment playing in Tucson as the Tucson Sugar Skulls, our arena football team. And of course, we've got this professional baseball team en route, the Mayos of Navajoa, right? Coming for Mexican Winter League. They're going to move over here. They're still working on
And they've
on
got a minor league team playing in the Saguaros,
I believe. The Tucson Saguaros, yep.
At Kino Sports Complex, I believe. And then the fall baseball with the Mexican team, which is just fascinating to me. I hope that's as good a deal, as good an addition for fans and the region as I think it's going to be.
I am going to advocate for the naming of that baseball team to be the Tucson Toros. We are bringing Tuffy back. We are going to make Tuffy great again, and we're going to make that one happen over here in some capacity. If you are listening, Jay Zucker, we're going to get that Toros name over to that team. Revive that Tuffy head and get it back out here in the old Pueblo for sure. In our restaurant news over here, Butte Burgers announced their closing at the MSA Annex. They're going to have a change in ownership. Ari Shapiro is selling that restaurant.
What's the name of that one?
Butte Burger. It's a vegan burger concept. They have been in the MSA Annex for the better portion of probably 6 years, 6.5 years. In fact, they opened up a second location for a while in Phoenix as the vegan trend really grabbed hold over here. But as we saw, unfortunately, with Charo Vita as well too recently, that vegan trend is tough to support a restaurant alone that doesn't have meat products. And it often can become a tremendous setback for even the vegans that if you offer a piece of chicken or a piece of steak, go, well, I'm not going to eat there because you've got a piece of meat on the same flat top as yes. my veggie patty, right. Or I have some cross-contamination in the fryers. And so it makes it tough for all vegan restaurants to survive out there. One thing is a vegan option, but it's a whole nother thing when you take your entire restaurant and concept vegan. And so that's an unfortunate piece of news on yet another restaurant closing here in the old Pueblo. James Beard Awards went out last night, or excuse me, on Monday night, and Chef Yataka Martin from Lam Wong, a Thai restaurant in Phoenix, won Best Chef in the Southwestern United States. And so cool to see in the James Beard Awards. Again, those are the Oscars of cooking essentially over here. And so kind of a big deal for those of us in the restaurant business. And Chef Anne Burrell died yesterday. So Food Network chef, known for her spiky blonde hair, sort of the women version of Guy Fieri. You may have seen her on Top Chef and a whole number of other food-related shows on the Food Network. Anne Burrell passes away, unfortunately, yesterday, at the age of 55. Now, when we think of top chefs in Tucson, guys that are getting things done, when we come back after the break, I'm going to bring on one of the coolest new chefs in Tucson. He's been operating a new restaurant in the Eddie Hotel located at River and Campbell called Pin and Flower. Mr. Logan Tessier, chef extraordinaire, coming up after the break. We're going to talk all things hotel and restaurant business. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and you know I love talking restaurant shop over here on The Morning Voice. And today, I've got Chef Logan Tessier, head executive chef of the Eddie Hotel and Pin and Flower Restaurant. Welcome,
That's
Logan.
Right. Good morning. How are we doing today?
Well, thank you. Thanks Excellent. For coming to spend part of your Wednesday morning with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure and honor to be here and get this and, you know, have fun doing this.
Hey, so why don't we break it down, your background a little bit for our listenership over here. Give us the meteoric rise of Logan over here as a chef.
Well, I grew up on my parents' ranch, so, you know, my mom was training horses from English to Western, selling them off. My dad was doing cattle, goats, sheep, cows, you know, anything pretty much livestock that was selling off to slaughter. So we would do that, and the interesting part for me is we would get some of the bones back from slaughter for the dogs to kind of keep loyal on the ranch, and sometimes we would get goat skulls back, and they still have the eyeballs in them. It's kind of a crazy, grotesque, morbid visual as a, you know, young child growing up. It always kind of just stuck with me, and you know, the raw intensity of what food could actually kind of look like. I was 18, 19. I was doing a bone-in saw at a hotel. Actually, my first job working at a hotel. I was going through New York Strip, and I had this deja vu that lasted like 90 seconds that reverted me back to my childhood. I was like, wow, this is, I'm already where I'm supposed to be type of deal, and everything just felt right. I never looked back.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of, you know, growing up on the ranch end of it, kind of seeing it, how food actually starts and the raw, more intense side of it and the cultivation of what it actually takes to get food to a table. And now on the other end, taking care of the food and making sure that it's cooked right and, you know, done with ethical, substantial, and respect to everything that, you know, Mother Nature brings to us to take care of us as human beings. So
I think most people truly don't understand how the cycle of food really works, right? Like how that animal protein isn't really just these little squares in cellophane wrap packages over at AJ's or Safeway in some capacity, that this actually comes from animals and that are often farmed in very large agro business type ways as well too. You look at like the carton of milk and you think of a silo and a barn and a sunshine and a chicken and a cow. Yeah. And that's not necessarily how the sausage is made.
Yeah. Yeah. Come to work, you know, but you want to stay as close to that as possible, you know, and I just truly stick to a lot of less is more a lot of the times, you know, when you, especially when you're cooking, you know, and that's just one of those chef things I've really always held on to. So
how did you connect with the Eddie? For those that don't know, the Eddie is a new hotel. It's been around for about 3 years now.
We're going into our third year of business. Yeah, so we just hit our 18 or 2.5 year mark. We're going into our third year this season, which I'm very excited about. You know, it's been challenges, a lot of pride factors, you know, a lot of fun behind it. You know, blood, sweat, and tears is, you know, as you always kind of go about something that you care about. So I was actually chef de cuisine at the Gallery Golf Club and Carlton Ritz. So I would kind of travel between several outlets throughout the day, making sure that everybody was doing what they needed to do. You know, I spent most of my time on a golf cart, which is actually kind of fun. And then, you know, just relaying between both executive chefs of what they needed to order and prep and pars and all their lists and those types of things. I wanted to take a break for a little bit. I paused. You know, just took about 6-8 weeks off of work, and just randomly I got this email. I checked it out, dirt parking lot, no glass, pretty bare bones, and I was like, I'd like to go this far back into something and, you know, be a part of the building of this before it's actually open.
Oh, without a doubt. And it's quite the process as well, too. I was at the neighborhood meetings, Logan, where they were announcing the rezoning and even potential annexation into the city of Tucson for the Eddy. And the neighbors in that area at River and Campbell, we're talking the northeast corner of River and Campbell over there. The neighbors were there with torches and pitchforks. Like, they nearly lynched the city officials. It was that ugly.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't hear or go that far back into it. You know, I was still at the other property, but that's pretty crazy to hear, you know. And it's, they wanted to do three or four stories.
That was part of it. You just hit the nail on the head. Over here. It was the third and fourth story, I think, that really drew the ire of the neighborhoods.
Right.
And they fought that one pretty hard.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I don't think most of the neighbors knew at that time, Logan, that the zoning was already okay for a hotel to be two stories. Some of them were showing up to, like, fight the concept of the hotel, and that was a done deal. Like, it was already zoned for that.
Right.
It was just a question of whether or not they could get to that third and fourth story. So how big is the Eddy Hotel right now?
We are 106 rooms. We're a Tapestry Edition Hilton, which means you got to have some kind of fun little backstory what goes into it. So they're more boutique edition hotels. On the Hilton umbrella. So Eddie O'Connell is the great-grandfather of the owner, Jim O'Connell, and was a baker during the turn of the 20th century in the boom towns in Montana, Helena, Great Falls, and selling baked breads and baked goods to the miners, which were the families, you know, during the gold rush at that time. And they just kind of spread and made their business from there, and, you know, went on several decades and went on to banking and into hospitality. So,
and so Jim owns a number of other hotels, correct?
Yeah.
Or has owned at least.
We are, I want to say, about 8 properties around the country. And we are breaking ground in Flagstaff as we currently speak.
No way. That's very cool.
Definitely.
And Flagstaff proper or just outside of Flagstaff?
I believe somewhere downtown. I don't quite know the specifics. I know there was, you know, a lot of work behind it, but right now the parking garage is being built for it, and it's going to have an upstairs bar. So lots of fun stuff that's going to be a second round for me to be building some stuff for the
Very
company.
Cool. Yeah. I'd love to hear of some growth in Flagstaff, too. I know they've had a lot of rough run of it in the hospitality industry because of the extremely high minimum wage that exists in the city of Flagstaff. They've got a higher minimum wage than even Tucson, and that's saying something.
Well, I wanted to say, even in terms of, you know, zoning up there and trying to build up there, because I know that they're real protective of their old style and their small community they up there. And, you know, sometimes it feels like South is a little bit of an island, but, you know, I'm glad to see, like how you're saying, some growth and some new stuff coming up there in that part of Arizona as well.
Well, we were super excited to see the Eddy pop up, you know, right across the street from us in Union Hospitality Group in St. Phillips Plaza, because hotels and restaurants go together like peas and carrots, right? These are like two things that like absolutely have a symbiotic relationship. Even if hotels have breakfast, and I know you do, and we'll talk about that one here in a minute. Even if there's free breakfast in some capacity, you're not going to eat at the hotel restaurant 7 days, you know, a week, 3 meals a day. You're going to go out and explore the other restaurants. And you guys, if you go to the website for the Eddy, you guys even, you know, advertise and have other restaurants on your website. Like, here are places that your guests can go dine. And we love like having that symbiosis with both the Eddy and the Windmill Inn. The Homewood Suites by Hilton. I'm dating myself here.
And it's fun to see how much that part of Tucson has grown itself naturally and organically, you know, just with St. Phillips Plaza and everything that you've done, you know, across the street with the Emporium and everything there. Now having our hotel, the Eddy, being right there, you know, if people want a safe place to stay, get out having some fun, traveling. But, you know, right around the corner, our guests get to go experience some fun local dining, you know, aside from what I'm doing inside the hotel as well. So, you know, it's great. It's a great area, and I just see that part of Tucson continually growing and flourishing. So,
same. I love River and Campbell, and that's why we've set up shop there, and we're super excited to be your neighbors and the fact that you guys have set up shop there. How are things going for the hotel right now? Like,
it's, you know, it's busy. You know, as you being a chef, you know, you get into these things, you have fun creating, but you eventually cross a threshold where it becomes more business, and, you know, you become more business minded. You start, you know, trying to be more frugal with costs and making just be more effective in that fashion. So, you know, aside from growing the business and myself growing in different areas, you know, our third year, I've found it as a chef harder to keep up with myself. And the more things that I do, you know, the more job opportunities I'm giving people, you know, the more growth, the more business that I'm bringing in, the more that I'm pumping out into other areas of town. You know, it's, I have chiropractors coming in from Flagstaff and Sholo today that I met at a networking event a couple of weeks ago at the Sands Club, and they have an event at the Grand Opera House here tomorrow night. And they're into stem cell growth. You know, contacts that I thought I'd never have.
Right.
So, it's just an interesting aspect, you know, of when you put yourself out there, and I did it as a chef, but all these other opportunities and factors in life come your way as well that you get to incorporate into the hotel. These are going to be guests at my hotel. You know, they get to go tell the story of, hey, I got to stay at the Eddie with Chef Logan. You know, he grew up on a ranch. You know, they do fresh baked bread. You know, they're the story of Eddie O'Connell being a master baker at the turn of the 19th century in Montana. So just lots of fun in and out of the hotel as well, you know. And initially, they weren't even going to do, they're going to bring outside caterers just for special events. They weren't even going to do breakfast, lunch, and dinner, any of that. I was like, I can do this. You know, this is something that I've done, and I would love to do it here for this property and bring the business about to do it. So,
no, that's fantastic, and no easy feat to do as well. We're going to take a quick break over here in just a minute, but when we come back, I want to break down what it takes to do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Most of the time, restaurants don't do this. You're kind of got to pick two of three, right? Like those old, you know, sayings in this shell game over here. You're either a breakfast place that also does lunch and you close up shop at 2 or 3 p.m., think sort of the prep and pastry model, or you're something along the lines like I do at, say, Union Public House, where we'll do lunch and dinner, but we're not necessarily doing breakfast over there. When you're doing all three, like, this is absolutely no small feat to be able to cover a restaurant of that size, because you end up with elongated hours. It might even nearly turn into a 24-hour restaurant, which is definitely not an easy thing to run over there. We've got another segment with Logan Tessier, executive chef of Pin and Flower and the Eddie Hotel. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news and talk.
Go to Facebook, 1030 The Voice is our page. Follow along with us. You can see your voice now. Hit that like and follow button to be notified of future broadcasts. The Morning Voice. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We get to spend every Wednesday morning, 7 to 9, on The Morning Voice. I love talking local restaurant shop with you. We also get The Morning Voice 5 days a week from 7 to 9. On Mondays, you've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He's also on the RTA board over there. Lots of fun things going on in the RTA.
Nothing happening there.
Yeah, no big deal. Nothing to see here besides for the city being in complete and total control of that, with Mike Ortega being appointed to the RTA chair. But that's a whole nother show, I guess. Over here on Thursdays, you've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing you the wonders from the University of Arizona for The Morning Voice. But we've got another segment over here with executive chef Logan Tessier from the Eddie Hotel, Pin and Flower Restaurant. They're located at the northeast corner of River and Campbell. Welcome back, Logan.
All right. Welcome to be back.
Hey, so we were talking before the break about restaurants that either are breakfast and lunch or lunch and dinner. And then, of course, there's nightclubs. But most of the time, you're not a 24-hour place, because if you do all three, it just might not ever end. What are the operating hours of Pin and Flower over here? What kind of hours are you guys running?
So breakfast starts at 6 and we run it till 10. And the first 2 years of business, lost a lot of sleep, you know, working a lot of 7 days, you know, getting this thing going and up off the ground.
Because breakfast starting at 6 means hot food ready to go at 6. What time are you in the building to make 6 o'clock start?
Right? So we go in at 5 in the morning. You know, we get everything hot that we need to go. Come 6 o'clock, you know, coffee's hot out, ready to go. Hollandaise sauce, you know, nice and warm, sitting in the window. Everything's, you know, I got a real top-notch AM team to get things going. But that takes work. You know, you have to lead people into managing tasks. You know, you really got to make these people believe in themselves. And getting up at 5 a.m, believing in yourself. Some days can be really hard, but you know, I've found the right people to do it. And that's just been a part of it, is you and I, as a chef, have invested my knowledge, my craft, into knowing that these people can now do it on their own, not only in these four sets of walls, but anywhere where they want to travel in the world.
No, that's fantastic. And it's one of the neat parts about the restaurant business, right? It's a skill set that you could literally take anywhere. I could put you in Hawaii tomorrow or in Japan the next day, and like, you could find a job. Yeah. Because there's a market for, you know, a guy that can make a mean omelet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, it's, you can go anywhere you want and travel and make that mean omelet, make that nice, beautiful sheen, napping hollandaise sauce ready to go, because there's hotels all over the world. This may not be what you do your whole life, but it's what you're doing now to get you to the next step of what you want to do as a chef, as an individual, as an engineer, as a father, X, Y, and Z, whatever that's going to lead up to. So that's been one of the things as a chef that I've built into my team to make sure that I have that continual wheel in motion, doing 3 meals a day type of deal.
Eggs are no joke though, Logan. I've said many times on this show that I think eggs are the absolute hardest dish to do in the restaurant business. What do you think about that?
You can't be yoking around with eggs.
Pun intended. Dad humor right after Father's Day over here, bringing the dad jokes in the morning.
I've been grilling all weekend. We're building up for that.
Yeah, you know, Father's Day is no Mother's Day in terms of restaurant business either, huh?
No. I was there with my three, you know, doing it up. But the kicker there was, you guys get to make your own pizza today when we go home. So
Nice.
Yeah.
So you guys do lunch and dinner then as well too at Pin and Flower?
Yep. So we close breakfast down at 10 o'clock. We give ourselves 1 hour. We have our all-day menu from 11 till 10 o'clock at night. And happy hour, our social hour, happy hour is from 4 to 6. You know, a couple flavors of fun wings that we have on there that have, you know, some Southwest infusions with some peppers that is some fun. Nice, some fun street tacos, quesadillas. Shrimp and grits, that's the kind of the number one banger that we have going on. People always ask for chef to come out and talk about, how did you come up with these shrimp and grits? I'm from the Southeast. I've never had them like this. Well, classic French cooking, a little bit of the Sonoran flavors, but, you know, the nice comfort food of grits and something like that. And, you know, it kind of goes a long way. And people always kind of judge me off of that plate, and especially the further east that people are coming into the hotel, the harder I'm getting judged, you know. And I have family. I grew up, you know, in Michigan during the summer sometimes, and it's, people are more critiquing on your food definitely than they are here in the West. So it's kind of fun to see some things come in like that. My favorite entree, I want to say, is probably going to be the hanger steak. You know, hanger steak's a cut off of a cow that's kind of close to the rib and close to the flank. That's doesn't yield a whole lot, but the marble factor in it, just the way that it goes against the teeth and you cut into it, is just so, you know, succulent and just so nice and rich.
A hanger used to be a budget cut, but it's gotten expensive these days as well, too, right? Yeah, this was like the secret chef's cut for a while, but like, they don't give those away anymore.
No, they're up there. So, but you know, I serve it with a nice cold chimichurri that I do. It leans more consistency on the pesto side, but the flavor factors there, you know, are kind of more with on the South American flavor profile that I like to bring in. Yeah, you know, lots of fun stuff that I've done, different menu items that I've changed, but, you know, I've gotten to a point where I'm bringing some new fun stuff on. On Father's Day, I did a bacon-wrapped shrimp with blue corn grits and a red pepper puree, which just knocked it out of the ballpark. So I'm going to be putting that on the menu come closer to fall, once people kind of start coming back into town. So,
do you get some autonomy to be able to create some of your own menu dishes, or are you hampered or hamstrung by Hilton as a property that they tell you what you got to serve?
Because of the Tapestry name branding and having to have that eclectic boutique story and everything involved behind it, I am promoted and accessible to kind of do and have these fun creations. So I have really no limits as to what I can and cannot do. So, that's based upon myself, you know, so.
That's awesome though, because so many times when there's some association with a franchise or chain, there's just going to be some limitations, some guardrails that say, well, at every, you know, Hilton Gardens, we serve this dish and this dish and this dish. But on the Tapestry products, you can pretty much go wherever you want to go.
Yeah, you have to be very unique, your own very story. And we're the only Tapestry in Arizona. I think there's 135 in the world, with 100 down the pipeline. So that, yeah, not a whole lot of them are out there. So,
and so, but you, it's a Hilton product, right? You can use your Hilton, I want to say honors points. It is, if I remember correctly, in their nomenclature for points.
Right. Yeah.
I got it right over there. Okay.
Diamond member.
Diamond member. Pardon. I don't get to travel as much over here as I'd like, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you're on year 2.5 right now. So this is your third summer. You know, I always say that somewhere between like the second and third summer is when you know where your real friends are in the restaurant business, right? Because you get to open up that first summer and there's that honeymoon factor. There's a newness carrying you, a new name brand. People are excited for new. But by the time you get to, you know, that second or really that third summer, like, you know where you're at that point in the market.
Well, yeah, you know where you're at. But curiously enough, each year and each summer even, I'm still obtaining more and more business. You know, it's not, I really not haven't felt a slowdown at all. I mean, yeah, the typical Tucson summer, you kind of feel a little bit, but even going into our third summer, I've carried on over business past into Father's Day where the occupancy has still stayed up in the hotel. And people don't really expect to find a local restaurant inside of a hotel either. So, you know, it's kind of a big benefit into our favor to do that in-house, but to be so close in other areas where they can go out and do a lot of fun things as well. So, you know, people get to come in and, you know, hey, what if people are curious, more tourists, I'm saying, yeah, go out there. Here's what's around, you know, what's down the road, you know, Charo's Steak downtown, you know, Caruso's, you know, Mama Luisa's. Yeah, there's some fun stuff. If you guys want to go out and travel, how long are you guys going to be here? Just make sure you come and dine, ask for chef, I'll bring you out a special dessert. Come and check us out as well, you know, because this is a part of the story. And, you know, people are leaving, oh, it was so nice, you know, to spend time with you, chef, to talk about this story, staying at the Eddie Hotel, we'll definitely be back. And it's, you know, a lot of home vibes too, you know, people are, it's a more face-to-face. It doesn't have the corporate, you know, flux that you would think that it's kind of cold. It's very warm, very inviting. The pool's a lot of fun. I'm out on the floor talking with tables a lot of the time, talking about the history and all that. So
do you get some staycation people? I know like some of the resorts on the larger side of things, you know, offer cut rates and end up with a lot of Tucsonans every weekend partying and bringing their own coolers and stuff by the pool. Do you get any of that action over there, or is the Eddie a little more upscale?
It's been a little more upscale than that. We really haven't had a lot of staycations come in. So it's kind of during the summer, more business travel. We get a lot of, surprisingly, pilots that are coming in for training at Davis-Monthan that stay with us, which is weird. I don't know how that happens or why that is, but it's interesting. It's been a thing since we've opened.
Hey, that's a great niche. Yeah, we'll take it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's the story's been a lot of fun, you know, so we get busier, you know, we have new plates. I'm changing the menu. I'm going to do a mesquite smoked sea bass coming up that I'm going to do over the fall. I want to, you know, just liven it up a little bit. I've relied on my culinary strengths up to this point, but yeah, I'm going to be doing some new menu changes and stuff as well. That's going to be fun for year three. And that's, you know, kind of the thing, honeymoon phase, you know where your true friends are, but I don't like to be stagnant. I like to, you know, always change things up, be creative, have a lot of fun doing things. You know, once you kind of get to the point like, okay, well, what's next? You know, like, let's actually start scratching our head and seeing what's next in terms of year three and all those, you know. So on top of doing breakfast, lunch, and dinner, we have a full service banquet side of things as well and catering. So, you know, sometimes we'll be doing just the Pin and Flower, but on the back end, you know, we'll have business meetings. You know, I've done plated dinners of up to 120 people while, you know, we're
also operating
burgers.
A restaurant. That's no easy feat right there for sure.
So, yeah, you know, and that's to challenge yourself. And as you grow and get bigger into things, you know, to not veer away from taking on more business, you know, how much can we actually take on? Like, let's actually, you know, do this. And being a chef is, that's what it's about. You know, if you could cook for one person, cook for 1,000 people. It's just about how effective you are of doing it.
Easier said than done, my friend. But let's take that to segue into a quick break for some awesome advertisers over here. We've got one more segment with Executive Chef Logan Tessier from the Eddie Hotel coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant and Logan at 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We've got one final segment with Executive Chef from the Eddie Hotel and Pin and Flower Restaurant, Mr. Logan Tessier. Welcome back, Chef.
Hey.
Hey, so I've got to see you at quite a bit of the local chef and food-driven events over the last few years, right? The World Margarita Championships, the various cooking and chef competitions. Like, you're out there. Like, what gives you the drive to go out there and participate in the local Tucson culinary scene so much?
Well, I believe that the more hands you have on deck, the more lively that it's going to be, the more participants you have. It's more fun, you know, to just being a part of it is probably my biggest win, and just working alongside with other great chefs here in town. That's my biggest factor in the beginning. And then I learned that I get an adrenaline kick out of doing a lot of these events, especially the higher the competition. It just drives me. It inspires me. And, you know, I feel more alive than any other times, you know, I would say, except for when I have my kids. You know, it's just that's a driving factor, is, you know, feeling the success, working with chefs alongside you that your pride factors with, that you've seen learn alongside with you as you've come up in the game, you know. So, you know, it's just being a part of it is the biggest aspect to me.
It's no easy feat to do. You know, I'm not sure that most listeners would understand how difficult it can be to do an offsite event on a Friday or Saturday, because these are, generally speaking, the busiest days of the year, or the busiest days of the week, excuse me, for a restaurant.
Yep.
And so what you're asking is, hey, can I take my executive chef and general manager and a top bartender or a top line cook and take them in a place called Not Our Restaurant and go make 1,000 bites or 1,000 drinks or something like that for people? Like, it's no easy feat to do.
You know, it's in that, you know, kind of to what I was saying earlier, and to making people believe, to, you know, leading people to believe in themselves. And, you know, at that point, yeah, there's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts that are going around you. And, you know, it's kind of like the center of a storm. And then you're like, wait, I got to believe in myself right now. I can do this. And I'm going to go out there and be the face of a business and something that I believe. And, you know, for as far back as I've gone in the hotel before it was even open, and to look at that point, to think I was mounting TVs in rooms, to doing chefs events, representing the hotel now in that broad spectrum, is a huge win within itself. And, you know, to the continuing drive of the building of the hotel, even though it's built, but now it's building its business, it's building into the city of Tucson, it's building its name. I'm building the team, the culinary team, that's the driving factor of the hotel. So, you know, all of those X, Y's and Z's are why I like to go out and put myself out there.
Well, but it's that involvement in the processes, right? That you were there from the beginning of hanging TVs and painting that bad boy, right? Like, to setting up the kitchen line, to executing every day, so you know where all the bells and switches and whistles are, right? Like, yep. You use every part of that property to make it work, and it's great that you've had that experience and now have the opportunity to also work on the business end of the business as well too, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's to get to that point and to learn and develop myself has been a huge fundamental part of the success of the hotel and my craft as a chef also, you know. And that involvement in the community and at River and Campbell, I think, is huge for us and a huge win in hospitality and culinary in Tucson within itself. So, you know, and that's just one factor to look at.
No, it's no easy feat to run a restaurant, as you know. I mean, there's a 2 or 3 point percentage margin on labor cost and a 2 or 3 point percentage margin on cost of goods sold, and that's the entire business. Mm-hmm. You don't do those things correctly, and quite frankly, you could have $10 million coming in the front door, but $10.1 million going out the back and be out of business in no time quickly.
Yeah, you got to be savvy out there. You got to be real wise about what you're doing. So, you know, it's just one of those things that, why do I go out there? Because it's continual success of looking in the mirror. As long as I'm out there doing these things and working in the same fashion of getting to put my name out there and do these community events, is the factor of doing things right in my eyes.
Without a doubt. And I think you guys are doing things right over there at the Eddie. It's a beautiful property. Mm-hmm. It was quite a challenge for Jim to take that risk, right, against those neighbors and torches and pitchforks and build something that wasn't four stories and is a very attractive part of Tucson. We love having you right next door to us over there. We get to see your guests stumble their way up and down.
There's been a few stories, definitely.
Yeah, we may need to create a lighted sidewalk or something between our places over here, a boardwalk.
Something, yeah, kind of like something like the Riverwalk in San Antonio that would stretch across right there.
It would be perfect, but we should talk about that. Yeah, we'll have to get together offline and put that one together. We've only got a minute left over here, Logan. Why don't we break down where guests can interact with the Eddie Hotel in Pin and Flower?
So we're an open concept. You know, we're open to the public. You don't have to be a guest of the hotel to come in. You know, you see the lobby, you see the front desk, you'll see the bar, you'll see, you know, the TV's on. You're like, okay, this is the restaurant, this is the Pin and Flower. You know, we'll always have one of our fun waiters or waitresses out there ready to come, you know, give our warm hospitality. So yeah, come check us out. We have a poolside menu with a nice fun pizza on it, ancient grain bowl, shrimp cocktail. So, and that's in addition to our happy hour menu and our all day menu as well. So I'm rocking and rolling three menus that are just a la carte. So lots of fun stuff to get through the summer. The pizza comes actually with two high noons, and yeah, hope to see you at the Eddie Hotel.
Love it. Thank you so much, Chef Logan Tessier. We appreciate you taking your time to spend part of your Wednesday morning with us here on The Morning Voice. It's been a fantastic day. Looking forward to another Morning Voice with you guys next Wednesday, 7 to 9 a.m. Hope you guys have a mostly peaceful Wednesday out there. Thanks for joining us on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk.